To the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Hi, it's John Williams. Pete Zimmerman's the producer, and we're really glad you've joined us for another hour of business news, big and small. Then Anna DeBlancis will come your way. And we start our show today with a conversation with Jason Turner. He's the head of multi-asset strategies, Wintrust Wealth Management. You can visit wintrustwealth.com to connect with Jason and his people. Welcome to the show, Jason. I hope you're well.
Thanks, I am, and good to be with you again, John.
You know, I sort of promoted this conversation as saying the good news is that things may be bad enough that they're going to get better. That is, some of these jobless numbers in Illinois and elsewhere are maybe the sort of thing that's going to push the Congress into finally getting off the dime here. What do you think about that?
I would agree with that statement. As unfortunate as it sounds, that things have to get bad to get better. This has created some momentum for another stimulus package that, quite honestly, before Thanksgiving, I thought was an impossibility before the new Congress was seated in January.
That's funny because some of our guests have said it would be impossible for them to not have one before the election. Now, your horizon was Thanksgiving, but a lot of people thought this would happen into the election because nobody wanted to go into November 3rd not having passed something. Past that point, then you thought maybe they wouldn't do it at all, huh?
I thought with a lame duck session of Congress and the high level of political polarization we've seen throughout the course of this election cycle, it was not likely that we would see something. However, as things have gotten worse from an employment perspective and from underlying economic data, that has pushed the members of Congress to come together and try to reach a bipartisan agreement to provide at least a lifeline for a few months for those Americans that are really struggling.
How is it shaping up then? What are you looking at?
Yeah, I think what we've seen in terms of the bipartisan effort from the members of Congress that have been working on this is an extension of the unemployment programs that have been critical, both to those that are self-employed, gig workers and the like, but also to those that have exhausted their state-run benefits, so an extension of additional benefit beyond any sort of state limitations. And then an additional $300 per week in terms of federal benefit that we saw in the extension that was forwarded late summer after the initial $600 additional benefit wore out.
So instead of the $600 boost, you get a $300. What about and that's unemployment. What about stimulus? Are they going to send checks directly to people?
And that's the difference in the two proposals that are out there. On the bipartisan congressional effort, there's no individual payments to individuals. The proposal that was put forward, I believe yesterday by the Treasury Secretary, traded that $300 additional federal unemployment benefit for $600 stimulus checks directly to Americans.
Is it fair to compare what we're doing to other countries? I mean, we're this republic and we are capitalistic, and not all countries in the world are those two things. But I did see a chart that showed what our aid to our citizens is like in the pandemic compared to other Western countries, and ours is small compared to what Germany and France and other countries are doing for their populations.
On a relative basis, that's true. Obviously, the size of the United States economy relative to the size of some of those economies in Europe is a different factor. So in absolute dollar terms, that's a little different picture. But you pointed it out well, that we've got a capitalistic bent to our republic, and that's different than the constitutional democracies you find in Europe that are a little bit more focused on a common welfare. And what we've seen work in Europe in terms of the German model, for example, where unemployment has not skyrocketed because they provided payments to businesses to keep people on payrolls as opposed to unemployment benefits, it has a different effect in the short term, but it also changes things in the long term. The American approach provides for a potential longer-term, large-scale restructuring of the American workforce for what may or may not be a different world after we emerge from the pandemic, whereas the European approach kind of promotes the status quo from pre-pandemic times.
One last thing, into your crystal ball, anything else that you're seeing or that we should know?
I think the interesting development we've seen with the push towards additional stimulus now is a revision in GDP estimates for the fourth quarter and for 2021, and looking a little bit more rosy. I think we were expecting a moderately strong fourth quarter because we had some effects of improvement. I think we're expecting a little bit better fourth quarter now because of the prospect of extension of stimulus, and we've seen some underlying stability in consumer spending through the holiday season. And I think that'll bridge into next year, particularly with the vaccine developments.
Yeah.
If we do see vaccines distributed, we should see stronger second and third quarter 2021 GDP results than we initially expected, and actually could see a full year GDP growth in 2021 north of 5%.
How about that? I'm thinking of Jared Kushner, who in the spring said that in July this economy is going to zoom. He may have been right, but just had the wrong year. I hope that's the case. Jason Turner, head of multi-asset strategies, visit WinTrustWealth.com. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you, John.
Well, we liked him so much this morning, we asked him to come back. Ian Schur, editor-at-large, CNET. Hi, Ian. Welcome back to the show.
How you doing?
Real well. You were on with us earlier today. I had specific questions about how our smart devices are able to listen in on our conversations and then feed us ads on various social media platforms. And you were a little surprising, I think, to our listeners. You said that technically they're not listening to everything we say, correct?
Correct. They are actually not using your microphone unless you are talking specifically into, like, recording a video. What is happening instead is that the advertising systems at Facebook and whatnot are so advanced and so capable that they actually know, in a lot of cases, what you are into before you actually look at it. And it's a lot of coincidence is the bottom line. And we actually tested it out on CNET ourselves just to make sure. And we wrote about it on our site, of course. But we were not able to prove at all that this is a thing. It's compelling, but it's not real.
And they say it doesn't happen, although people don't believe they don't believe what Zuckerberg says, we're not doing that. And you described it as, if my friends are also into the things I am into, then even though I may or may not have spoken it into my phone, the way they're getting that fact and that information and feeding it back to me is through the web of people I've made on all of these different platforms. Let's move on to other topics. AirPods Max, what is this?
This is a new pair of headphones that are $549. and it is quite interesting to see Apple release them. They announced them just 2 days ago. And they are designed to be super high-end wireless headphones. Now, you may have thought Bose and Sony headphones for $300-some-odd was expensive. But our reviewers, who just got hands on it, says that it's actually one of the best headphones he's tried. And it's not surprising, I guess, that these devices are actually already sold out on Apple.com through the end of the year. So clearly there's a market for it, even though to you and me and probably a lot of other people, it's an eyebrow-raising price for something that doesn't seem like it might be worth that. I don't know.
I guess the audio reproduction's great. Are they noise-canceling, too?
They better to have noise canceling when they charge that much. Yes, and one of the things that Apple also does is that they borrowed some features from the AirPods Pro, which are $250, so less than half. And one of the things that they did is that they have not just noise canceling, but also a thing called transparency mode, where what will happen is it actually strategically pulls in sound from the outside world so that you can, for example, hear if there's a car coming by, if you're walking down the street, or if someone calls your name, like when I'm doing the dishes, I can still hear when someone's yelling for me. So those types of things are pretty nifty. And one last thing I'll bring up is spatial simulated surround sound. So this is something only Apple's done so far, but it's using a lot of the surround sound technology that exists for movies, and it's simulating that in your headset. And I've used it. It's pretty weird, but it does work.
Let's talk about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Why is she in your news these days?
So she has started basically gaming in public. And it's really fascinating. So if you don't know, there's a website called Twitch where people actually watch other people play video games. This is actually an enormous part of the video game industry, and if you don't know about it, it's quite an interesting rabbit hole, filled with its own celebrities and multimillionaires and everything else. Well, AOC decided that she was going to start playing games on this website and invite other very high-profile people to play with her. And during that stream, this was back in November, I think, or October, she said she was going through the whole thing. She was saying, reminding people, hey, make sure to sign up to vote. Hey, make sure to register. Make sure that you get that you pick out a time to go vote. And it became a very interesting way to get out the vote. So now other politicians in Congress want to jump on this wagon, and they want her to teach them how to do this stuff because she is very internet savvy. So it's very interesting to see this happening, and, of course, always the modernization of politics, which is happening all the time.
Floyd Mayweather Jr. is in your stream today, too?
Yes. So the 43-year-old is going back in the ring, if you didn't know, in February, and his opponent will be a 25-year-old YouTube star named Logan Paul. And it is a very odd thing to see, but believe it or not, there has been a growing interest in YouTube stars getting into boxing. Logan and his brother Jake are two in particular. Jake Paul actually just finished a round against Nate Robinson, the NBA player, where he knocked him out cold, and it became a whole thing on the internet.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting to see this happening, and you know, people who are really into boxing feel like it's cheapening the sport in some ways. But a lot of people also argue, you know, it's been losing a lot of attention to the UFC and all this other stuff. So it's actually reigniting interest by a lot of young people.
One last thing. California is partnering with Apple and Google for contact tracing. Is that right?
Yeah, and this is actually a technology that is available on all of our phones right now, Apple and Google. You have to turn it on. They don't have it on by default. But what it does is that it will identify if whenever you're nearby someone and your phones actually talk to each other, they send slight information. It's all anonymized, so there's no way to identify you. But if one of you gets sick and goes and gets tested and confirmed, the doctor will ask you, hey, do you have this app on your phone? And if you say yes, then they will input a code, and the iPhone and the Androids will send a notification to everyone you were nearby saying, hey, someone, they don't say who, got sick and got tested and got it. You should either quarantine or get yourself tested. It's a very interesting way to go about kind of contact tracing, and we've written a lot about it on CNET, but you know, it's going to be interesting to see if this really works. Apple and Google, it's the first time they've ever done something like this.
How many people are going to opt in will be the question, I guess. Ian Schur is the editor at large. It's CNET, CNET.com. Talk to you soon, Ian. Thanks for your time.
Take care.
Let's visit a little bit now with Ariana Gibson. We're visiting with people from a Chicago-based insurance startup. Think about this. She's the head of driver insights at ClearCover. Visit clearcover.com. Let's talk a little bit about how we have traveled and what we are going to be doing. Ariana, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, John. It's nice to be here.
So I guess an insurance company would know a little bit about this. Just real quick, what's your insurance company about here in Chicago? How are you guys different?
Our primary focus is on the people that we serve. So I think what makes us different is that we have a high aptitude with technology, and we use technology to save drivers money and create better insurance experiences.
So are you an insurance?
I think that last. Oh, sorry.
No. Finish that thought. Keep going.
I was going to say, I think that last part is the challenging one, because I don't think a lot of people associate good experiences and insurance that often, and we really are trying to change that to show that this can be something that you can trust and that can seamlessly fit into your life without, you know, being top of mind all the time.
Just seems like such a crowded space. Are you brokers and line me up with other companies, or are you actually doing the underwriting? You're the insurance company.
Great question. We do our own underwriting, so we are proud to be able to handle all of that. We are an insurance company, and we aren't just in Illinois. We're actually in 12 states now, so growing every day.
ClearCover.com. You've been surveying people about their travel habits. Let's start with Thanksgiving. What happened?
Yeah, So obviously this has been a really unique year. And so one of the things that's always been a cornerstone of ClearCover's brand is understanding customers so we know what it is that they want so we can try and deliver that. And we did a survey in November and actually did another in December. So earlier in the summer, we did a survey to understand driving behavior and how people are using their cars in different ways and how COVID was affecting driving behavior then. What we are learning from November and December surveys is that the results are pretty similar, given everything going on in the world. And the overarching theme is that travel is down, but the use of cars for travel is up.
I get that. But I would imagine this Thanksgiving, fewer people traveled. More people stayed home, right?
Absolutely. And what was interesting was that we were able to compare the numbers from November and December. And so even though 9 out of 10 people in our November survey said that they planned to travel, when we checked back in December, we learned that 56% of people who counted themselves in that category of planning to travel for Thanksgiving ended up canceling their plans. And when we dug a little deeper to understand why the majority, so 78% of people who canceled, did so because of COVID.
Sure. So that's fascinating, though. So while a lot of us said, yeah, I'm going to hold out, this sounds like me and a lot of people I know. I'll travel if I can. And then a day or two before, maybe, we said, no, we're not going to do it. More than half of us canceled our plans for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's just sort of human nature. People were craving connection and seeing the people we're closest to so that it wasn't surprising to learn that such a high percentage of people wanted to do it, but there have just been so many changes and day-to-day developments state by state, and it's such a personal choice. So, you know, surprising and maybe a little disheartening to learn that the majority of people were not able to keep the plans that they wanted to, but we know that safety is number one, and as an insurance company, we care about safety. So.
Yeah, well, and I think the governors would say hooray for that, too. I mean, it's too bad, but that was the drumbeat, don't go, don't go, don't go, and they're doing that again this Christmas. What are people saying about travel plans for Christmas?
Those are down as well. So people are less likely to travel. They are compared to November numbers of in November we asked about travel for November holidays and for December holidays. Then we asked again in December about those plans for those December holidays, and people were 58% less likely to travel. So 60% of people are saying, I am not going to do it. 40% of people surveyed in December said that they still plan to do it, and unsurprisingly, 75% want to drive. So majority of people are opting for car travel if they are going to do it than feeling comfortable flying in planes.
But to that first number, what percentage of people say they are or are not going to travel for Christmas or, well, this is Hanukkah, but for the December holidays?
40% of Americans surveyed said that they still plan to travel. But this actually is a decrease of 51% from last year. And then a big decrease from the number that thought they would, you know, sort of anticipated in November, of course, I'll travel for December holidays. And now, you know, a big decrease with only 40% of those surveyed saying they will travel for the December holidays.
Yeah. And that may change, too, right? I mean, if it gets worse closer to Christmas anyway, then maybe those numbers move a little bit, or maybe this is our nature. But if we get an uptick, that is, if the COVID cases go down, then people maybe will say, okay, I'm going to travel, and then we will get an uptick. But I guess these are still fluid numbers is what I'm trying to say.
Yep, and that, we tried to account for that, too, just sort of understanding that you can't know what you don't know, and 22% of people we surveyed said that they still might cancel if COVID continues to spike. So what that tells us is people are paying attention to those spikes and hopefully doing what's best for themselves, their families, and others.
Ariana Gibson is the head of Driver Insights at ClearCover. And their website is clearcover.com. Ariana, we'll talk again. Thanks for your time today.
Sounds great. Thanks, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN, and the business news continues. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Food startup accelerator Plug and Play will reportedly open a Chicago office focused on connecting startups, investors, and companies in the food and beverage industry. They're attracted to the city because of the many corporate partners based in and around Chicago. Plug and Play will work with PepsiCo, Mondelez, and ADM, among others, to help food and beverage startups in the city get up and running. Exelon, the parent company of ComEd, is selling its solar business. The company operates solar farms at 600 sites across the country. The deal, worth $810 million, is with Toronto-based Brookfield Renewable Partners, according to Cranes. Boeing 737 MAX is once again carrying passengers after being grounded for 20 months. An airline in Brazil became the first to start using the planes for commercial service on Wednesday. The planes were grounded after two international flights crashed, killing 346 people. The FAA cleared the airline to resume flying last month. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Amy Guth joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's talk about DoorDash, Amy, and what's been happening there. Give me an update on that.
Yeah, so DoorDash had its IPO yesterday, and it soared 85% in its Wall Street debut. You know, I think a lot of people have been very nervous about what's going on, you know, big companies like that going out and going public right now, but it's one of two. The other one is today, and that is Airbnb that I think a lot of investors are watching really closely. DoorDash, of course, you know, it makes sense why it's doing so well and why its valuation is what it is. We've seen DoorDash and food delivery companies like it really soar during the pandemic as more people are relying on food delivery and home delivery rather than going out to restaurants. So it opened at $182 a share. So that values the company at around $70 billion, which is almost as much as FedEx, just to kind of put it in perspective of how big that company's value is right now. Of course, we're going to take a look at Pfizer and how that performs as you know the vaccine is being reviewed and all of that today with the decision expected, as well as Airbnb. You know, a lot of different speculation around Airbnb because there's not as much demand for travel right now, but they're kind of making some big bets in terms of what the future is going to look like in travel, and they feel like a small controlled space, like a you know staying in someone's apartment, might be more comfortable for people than in a big hotel.
It's amazing, though, some of these companies that don't turn a profit yet, and yet people are willing to bet on them. They valued their own shares at $102, and what did they open up at, 180 or close the day at nearly
182.
Closed it closer to $190. And not all of those IPOs are going swimmingly for some of these high-tech companies, but what do you know, DoorDash. And isn't it amazing to you, Amy, despite all the bad press they're getting? I don't think what's happening in Chicago is unique, but investors like this one, didn't they?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, one thing that's happening in Chicago that is raising a lot of eyebrows is that DoorDash has implemented a Chicago tax. It's $1.50 that you would see on your bill if you used DoorDash. There, it's kind of in response to the city council putting a cap on delivery fees, saying there's a 10% order fee and then 5% fee for things like marketing. They did the same thing in a city in Colorado after their city council had put a similar, you know, cap on delivery fees. So, you know, a lot of DoorDash news here locally, but certainly we'll keep watching that IPO. It's really, really amazing to see, you know, the investor enthusiasm for IPOs right now that seems a little bit counterintuitive, you know, given kind of volatility and given the state of things and still a lot of uncertainty about the pandemic, a big appetite for IPOs.
Talk to us about Facebook. Give us an update on that.
Yeah, so Facebook has been having, you know, quite a bit of, you know, a lot of scrutiny lately. A lot of, you know, they've testified, Twitter and Facebook leadership both testified, this fall over, you know, in front of legislators. And now dozens of states and the federal government have sued Facebook in these twin antitrust lawsuits. They're alleging that they've abused its dominance in the digital marketplace and been anti-competitive. You know, a phrase that was kind of thrown around was like this, you know, squash, something like they would either squash it or buy it up. And so if this lawsuit proves successful, what might end up happening is that we would see Facebook sell off some of its, you know, big purchases like WhatsApp and Instagram and things like that. So I'm going to be watching that really very closely. I've said several times that I think we can often look at European courts, particularly Irish courts, to kind of see our own future with how things play out in a legal setting with tech giants, because Irish courts got way, way ahead of this, especially in terms of data privacy and monopoly and things like that. So I think sometimes we can kind of read the tea leaves and kind of get a sense of what might happen in a couple years based on what Irish courts are doing now. So, you know, I think it'll be interesting. Given how much scrutiny they've been under, I would not be surprised if they did have to sell off some part of the company.
Delta is trying to get us to fly internationally, huh?
They sure are. American. I think all of the airlines really are doing a lot of things right now for passengers. But Delta is getting rid of its $200 international ticket change fee. So it's usually about $50 to $75 domestically and then $200 internationally. Some airlines dropped that earlier to just say, you know, we'd rather have people on the plane to get their $50 fee. So they dropped the domestic ones. But now we're seeing Delta all join American and drop that international fee for those long haul routes. So change in cancellation fees, that accounted for about $2.8 billion for U.S. carriers last year. That's according to the Department of Transportation. So it's not an insignificant number, but they're willing to drop that, you know, in hopes of getting people onto flights. And as we're seeing more and more airlines experiment with, you know, we heard this week that American was going to do some at-home test kits for customers that you could order your kit in advance and do, you know, have a quick test before you got on that flight, things like that. We're seeing airlines do a lot of creative thinking around how do we get people feel good about flying, and then once we get them on the plane, you know, how do we make it easy for them to say yes, and how do we help ease, you know, safety issues on both sides of that flight. And so I think we're going to see a lot more of this. Of course, once one airline makes a move and another one, and then we start kind of seeing the others kind of, it forces their hand a little bit. So I wouldn't be surprised if we started seeing a lot more big carriers starting to drop or reduce their international change fees.
Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Amy. We'll visit again.